We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Eurostep podcast. My name is Kane Tippin and I am joined by Ty Windish just minutes after the NBA Awards night has ended. It was a long wait for the NBA Awards night. It was a very long NBA Awards night tonight, but a really, really good night for the Bucks. They take home a whole bunch of awards. But Ty, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Why is every NBA thing going super long lately? First the draft. Now this, it's like, this was a concise league. I mean, it's the games don't take that long, and all of a sudden we're dragging things out. I'm a little perturbed about that, but honestly, pretty hard to complain about tonight considering the results for those invested in the Milwaukee Bucks.
No, I'm a big fan of Shaq, first of all, so I want to say that straight off the bat. Really, really big fan of Shaq and the TNT crew in general, but there was some strange filler tonight, and I don't really understand why Larry Bird and Magic Johnson are up there giving long speeches when we're already running overtime, waiting to find out who wins the MVP. But getting to the awards, as I said, a really, really good night for the Bucks. Giannis wins the MVP, as we probably all figured he was going to do and expected he was going to do at this point. We saw some of the early voting come out. He takes out the MVP. Mike Budenholzer wins Coach of the Year. John Horst wins Executive of the Year, which, by the way, he didn't get to have a speech, I guess, because he was the one that they decided to cut out of the broadcast. We just come back from a commercial, and he's got the trophy sitting on the table with a big smile on his face. But really, the Bucks, they won most of the awards that they were supposed to be. Giannis finishes second in Defensive Player of the Year. So we'll run all through these, but I think, first of all, we have to start with Giannis, right?
Yeah, I think always a good place to start and end, which is, I guess, what we're doing here. I think very deserving. The Rockets, I don't know if you saw this yet or not, the Rockets Twitter account already is protesting the result, which seems weird and kind of inappropriate for an official team account to do, but whatever. I mean, this is a team that sends memos over missed free throws and conference finals games, so what do you really expect? But, and see, I can say that because I'm not, like, I don't work for the Bucks. I just talk about the Bucks, so it's kind of a different thing. But anyway, enough about the Rockets. Giannis, you know, leads the best team in the NBA in the regular season. All around, offense plus defense. It's pretty hard to argue anyone was nearly as impactful for the entirety of the season. I just think this was a slam dunk, which is fitting because a lot of Giannis' shots are slam dunks, and I think the voting reflected that. I think, what did he have, like 77 or so first place votes. I know he and Harden got all the first and second place votes, which, thank goodness, there was some really sloppy, I think, voting results at some of these races from what I saw people tweeting and and the totals that were shared. I'm glad that no one put anyone besides those two in the top two. I think Paul George is close for a little while. He fades out late. I didn't think anyone else really was more deserving, more valuable than either of those two players, Giannis and Harden. So all in all, a good result, fitting. I'm not going to be mad. Harden got some votes. I think we agreed most of the season. He had a absolutely terrific campaign, one-of-a-kind, remarkable offensive season. But, you know, I think the voters have made it clear, maybe a little bit of a snapback from the Russell Westbrook MVP that was all about numbers, even though everyone knew his team wasn't as good. This is sort of a return to honoring the team. I think that's a good and valuable thing for MVP.
Yeah, just looking through the voting, and you sort of touched on that just there. So you were right. Well, 78 first-place votes Giannis had. So the way they score this is 10 points for a first-place vote, seven points for a second, five for a third, three for a fourth, and one for a fifth. Giannis finished with 78 out of 100 votes for first place, which is essentially going to win you the award if you get that amount of first-place votes. He has 23 second-place votes, and you switch those around for Harden. So as you said, Giannis and Harden have all the first and second-place votes. Paul George was the overwhelming third place to get us. So Giannis finishes with 941 points, 776 for Harden, and 356 for Paul George. Nikola Jokic, Stephen Curry, Dame Lillard, Joel Embiid. Round out the numbers. There's a couple of funny ones at the bottom, and you know it's kind of weird to say it's a funny one for LeBron, but LeBron gets one fifth place vote, and so does Rudy Gobert, which is interesting. I'm not sure who gave him.
We'll find out tomorrow morning when they release the results.
Right, exactly. So
I have a guess. I have a guess, but we can go on.
But in the end, you know, as you said, a much deserved MVP for Giannis. He finishes the regular season with 27.7 points per game, 12.5 rebounds, 5.9 assists, 1.5 blocks, and 1.3 steals. Second MVP in franchise history, and the first since Kareem in 1974, who, as we found out, does not know how to say Giannis's name. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, three-time MVP winner in Milwaukee, and now you have to say Giannis has that in his sights, wins the MVP at 24 years of age. And really, like you said, this wasn't just about the numbers. We know that what James Harden has done, and we've seen what the Rockets have tweeted out after about the numbers, the 40-point games, the 50-point games, the 60-point games. But at the end of the day, Giannis got the job done on both ends of the floor. First team all defense. As we said earlier, he finishes second defensive player of the year. And really, this is an award that should reward dominance on both sides of the court, and no one in the NBA came close to dominating both ends of the floor like Giannis did this year.
No, and then, you know, this is kind of it's sort of almost a sideshow spectacle is what it's become at this point, but, you know, I think it matters that right now there's smoke in Houston about Chris Paul and James Harden not getting along and problems on the team and guys not feeling incredibly engaged all the time with, you know, watching Harden dribble a lot and isolate a lot to get all those terrific numbers. I mean, the Bucks were the opposite of that entire sort of that idea of discord and disharmony in the locker room. I mean, all season long, Milwaukee on the same page. And I think I know we've talked about this before on the Eurostep, but that always with an NBA team is going to start and end with the franchise player. And that obviously in this case is Giannis. And I think that matters too. It's most valuable. It's not best offense. It's not best numbers. It's not even best player. It's most valuable. And I think hard to argue that wasn't Giannis.
Yeah, no question. And obviously this meant a lot to Giannis. He's never been a guy. If you speak to him during the season, and when we did get the chance to speak to him during the season, he would always deflect away from it a little bit. There was no question that this was something that he really, really wanted. But during the season, when you talked to him, as I said, he would always make it about the team and winning, and that was all he really cared about. But I think we saw tonight when Giannis got caught up on stage that I guess the emotion of winning this award and where he's come from, and obviously the passing of his father was probably the really emotional part of this speech that we saw tonight. This guy's, I'm not sure whether there's a bigger family guy in the NBA than Giannis. He does everything with his brothers, does everything with his mother and his girlfriend. And it was a pretty, it was a great speech. I don't really know how else to describe that when he did go through that period where he thanked his dad and said that he still does everything for him and he is the one that motivates him to be as good as he can be and to show up and do the right thing, as he said. This was certainly something that meant more than just basketball to Giannis. And I, you know, it, the way that he thanked the Bucks franchise and thanked the owners, thanked the players and the coaches, I think that the way that he's, that the Milwaukee has responded to him since he's come to the city and the way they've made him feel welcome and how Giannis has embraced that, I think we saw tonight what this really meant to him. And it was a pretty special speech. It was one of the more memorable ones I can certainly remember.
Yeah, almost a little reminiscent of the classic, you know, KD, you the real MVP moment, just because, you know, that same sort of very genuine, heartfelt feeling. And, you know, you don't really need a cap put on a moment like your, you know, your young franchise player winning MVP. It's going to be a great moment regardless. But just to have it be so poignant, I think so powerful for so many people. You know, the clips are everywhere on social media right now, and for very good reason. I think it's very cool, and I couldn't agree more. Just a terrific moment for Giannis and for everyone watching.
And that wasn't really the only emotional moment tonight. Coach Bud did take out the Coach of the Year award. And this one was, I thought out of the awards that we were going to see tonight, I wasn't sure whether Bud would win this. I did think that there was a strong case for both. Obviously, Doc Rivers, who just actually looked like he was a little bit shocked that he didn't win the award, but Michael Malone as well. There were so many teams this year that I think made big jumps and came from under the radar. Certainly the Clippers, the team that, with no real star, then they trade away Tobias Harris, the way that they were able to fight through to the playoffs. Incredible job by Doc Rivers and that team. Obviously, we saw Lou Williams won Sixth Man of the Year tonight. And for Michael Malone as well. Yeah, Nikola Jokic, obviously an all-star player a real star of the game. But, again, a lot of lesser names that got the job done in the West and really held that number one seed for the majority of the season. So I thought this one was going to be a tight run thing. Bud does get it. And I think in the end, it's interesting because, you know, when you really think about it, you say, oh, well, Nick Nurse just won the championship in his first NBA season. But I think this, obviously, when you think to when the voting is done at the end of the regular season, I don't think that anyone expected the Raptors to go on that run. And it was based on what Bud was able to do. Obviously, the Bucks have their first 60-win season since 1980, 1981. First year with Milwaukee, Bud's a two-time Coach of the Year, and there's not too many guys that have done that.
No, there's not. And I think one of the very, I won't say very interesting, but just sort of interesting threads is it actually hasn't really worked out for first-year coaches who win a title with their teams to win Coach of the Year. Obviously, the Bucks own Mike Budenholzer wins in 14-15 the year Steve Kerr takes over the Warriors and takes them to the title. And like you said, voters at the time don't know who's won the title, which annoying in some aspects, but it kind of does make sense because I feel like so many things would be so influenced so heavily by, they won the title, so they should get this award and that award, etc. It makes sense sort of to do it the way they do, maybe not to wait so long to announce them. But the year after that, Ty Lue takes over the Cavaliers, who shocked the Warriors, and none other but Steve Kerr gets the nod there. So sort of an interesting Coach of the Year dichotomy. Nice that Bud gets it on his first year on a very, very good team, which also was Kerr when Bud stole it. It would have been, I guess, almost poetic in an unfortunate way for the Bucks head coach if someone like Doc Rivers had won it, you know, sort of more recognizing the achievement of doing more with less than recognizing that of making a, a solid team, a good framework into a juggernaut. But, you know, these things clearly change year after year. No two cases are exactly the same. And I think, like you mentioned, there were a few deserving candidates. I thought Bud deserved it, but I don't think have been stunned completely if he didn't win. I was pretty sure it was going to be him, but some of these awards can end up being pretty funky sometimes.
No, they can, but I think that, you know, when you look at the Bucks, so long a team that, yes, they had Giannis, and the interesting thing is that, you know, I do think that Giannis took his game to another level. Obviously, you know, the numbers were improved again for the sixth season in a row. Obviously, his minutes were down also, so he was able to probably get a little bit more rest than he had in the past, even though, you know, Giannis, by his own admission, thinks that maybe in the future he does need to take even a further step back. But, you know, this Bucks team, as I said, even with a quality player like that, Chris Middleton, last year a borderline all-star player, they only win 44 games. And, yeah, they had a little bit of adversity through the season with some injuries that cost them. The depth wasn't as good as it was this season. But they go from 44 wins to 60. And I think the big thing, obviously, defensively, this is a team that under Jason Kidd, outside of the first year in 2014-15, where they were second-ranked defense, they really were in the middle to the lower ranks defensively, despite having all this talent. Mike Budenholzer comes in and is able to simplify everything. And certainly a scheme that through the year, you know, many Bucks fans questioned whether that was the way that they wanted to play. Certainly defending the pick and roll in particular and the way that they gave up a bunch of jump shots. But this Bucks team proved through the season that this was a scheme that worked. And they finished with the number one ranked defense, the number four ranked offense. Always been a team that could put up points, but they couldn't stop them down the other end. They found a way to do that, obviously, when you bring in a guy like Brook Lopez, that help Giannis himself, Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, all these terrific individual defenders. And I think when you're trying to analyze all these other coaches, and, you know, those teams were good. The Clippers were good. The Nuggets were good. But the Bucks were really elite and had one of the more dominant regular seasons that we've seen, you know, with some of these other, you know, great teams with Houston, obviously, last season, the Warriors over the past few years. You look at the net rating and those sorts of things, that they were really on that level. So I think in the end, that's probably what separated it for the voters. And again, you know, when we talk about the speeches here, you know, Bud, not always a guy that doesn't show a lot of emotion. I mean, he certainly gets fired up during games, but certainly not to what we saw tonight when he was, you know, having his speech up on the stage after collecting the trophy. Certainly when he started to talk about his kids and his family, choked up a little bit. And, you know, I think that, for me, again, is just a sign of what these guys go through during a season to have the success that we had this season. And it doesn't always work out, but, you know, the NBA season is long. And for a guy like Bud, who comes into Milwaukee, wants to change, you know, everything that the Bucks are doing on the floor, has to integrate all these new pieces, you know, with a new franchise. Obviously, you have to sacrifice a lot. While with your kids, you miss out on a lot of stuff. And I think we saw tonight what that means to him, what his family means to him. And again, it was a pretty emotional few seconds there, I would say. And it was really nice to see. I mean, I think the Bucks obviously had a great showing tonight at the awards, but I think the human element of it all was also really touching.
Yeah, I agree. It reminds me really of the NBA draft, which there were a lot of really cool moments like that. Especially RJ Barrett and his father stand out to me right now. But I think one of the interesting things with Bud's candidacy, it kind of compares and contrasts in interesting ways with John Horst, who I know we'll get to in a second. But, you know, you mentioned Brook Lopez, and I think that's a good example of sort of why I think both of those cases can work, because Horst gets credit for signing Brook Lopez. And then you could sit there and say, well, if he made this great signing, you know, is Bud really doing that much? And I would say yes, because nobody looked at Brook Lopez as a defensive anchor of a great defense before this year. No one, you know, who had been paying close attention to him, at least it seemed like. I mean, that was pretty much the opposite of Brook Lopez's reputation. So I think you can sort of do a middle ground there of, you know, the executive gets credit for bringing in the guy, but it's not just like anybody could have coached Brook Lopez into what he was this season, or anybody could have gotten this from this group. I think it's more complicated than that. I think it's more nuanced than that. And I thought this for a while, it's weird and kind of terrible to use one good thing about a team against a player's or an executive or coach's race for some sort of award. Like it's a bad thing to have talent around you. I think the most important thing in the NBA is to learn how to thrive when you have that talent around you. And, you know, I saw a lot of weirdness from Bucks and Rockets fans trying to almost take down their own teams and prove the other guy had more help. And it's like, ignore that. Like, you should be able to play with help. That's how you make a great championship team. And it's just terrible to me to kind of tear down, you know, especially a team you root for, try and build up some sort of a case. And, you know, another thing that's terrible, really, is guys are terrible at taking care of their health. Whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse, guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to chat with a doctor online. With Roman, you can get medical care for ED, if appropriate, from the comfort and privacy of your own home. You can handle everything online in a convenient, discreet manner. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/BlueWire and complete an online visit. If your doctor decides that treatment would be appropriate, they can prescribe genuine medication that can be delivered in discreet packaging right to your door with free 2-day shipping. Guys, go talk to the doctor. ED can be tough to tackle, but it's really important to get checked out. And with Roman, it's easy to connect with a doctor. Just go to GetRoman.com/BlueWire to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's a lot of free. That's GetRoman.com/BlueWire for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/BlueWire. And then another one of our partners here, making sure that all sorts of people get taken care of, look neat and presentable. It's Harry's Razors, because Blue Wire wants to make sure all of our listeners to the Eurostep and all of our great podcasts are shaving comfortably. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to save $10 on a value trial set, which includes, everyone knows, we'll say it anyway, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and the travel blade cover, the essential travel blade cover. All of that for just $3. No more of these cheap razors. Harry's Fix Shaving. They combine the simple, clean design with the quality and durable blades. Those are 4 very good adjectives. Simple, clean, quality, durable, and at a fair price. Yeah, everybody knows. Everyone around the world knows about the world-class blade factory in Germany. It's been making quality blades for more than 95 years. They're not overpriced. They're not over-designed like these other razors. They're great razors. Harry's Razors. And you, dear listener, can join the 10 million who have tried Harry's and claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave and your razor, let them know. They'll give you a full refund. To get started, just go to harrys.com/bluewire. Redeem your razor and your trial set for just $3, Kane. Just $3. A lot of free, a lot of $3, a lot of good deals going around.
No, it's a great deal. Always great deals with the Blue Wire ad reads that you take care of, which I very much appreciate. But you did speak a little bit about just some final thoughts on the Bud Coach of the Year, and you did speak a little bit about bringing this group together and what that meant. And it was interesting. There was a quote today that I tweeted from a story that I had that was on Bucks.com. It's probably still out there, I'm guessing, floating around somewhere. But where Danny Ainge was talking about the Celtics and just their locker room not really getting along. And I tweeted out a quote from Bud that said that he believes that, you know, particularly with these contending teams, that everyone really talent level was on the same sort of caliber. I mean, these teams are really good. You look at the straight up talent on the Celtics, really super talented team individually. Likewise with the Bucks, but the difference with the Bucks was they played together, they played unselfishly, and they enjoyed each other's success. And a few of the quotes that stick out to me when, you know, relating it back to Bud, George Hill was telling me that he's only ever been in one situation like this in his whole career, like Milwaukee, that is, that was with Indiana, where they went, had a couple of runs to the Eastern Conference Finals. And he said, Coach Bud and all his staff make it like this. They make the egos go away. They make guys want to be here and want to play together because of what they do. So we all owe them all the thanks for that. Brooke Lopez was another guy that said this is what Bud brings to the team. He said, it's huge. It makes showing up to practice, games, work every day that much easier in any workplace situation or whatever it is. If you don't like who you're working with, it's going to make it tough. And you might think, oh, I don't want to see this guy today. It's obviously not the case here. It's a complete opposite. You get excited when you get to see your boys and coming out here and hooping with your brothers. And then he went on to mention some of the other things that Bud got this team doing through the years, whether it was team dinners that they did all the time, and Bud was the instigator for those. They would often, you know, play games with a flag football, wiffle ball. There's a bunch of days where, you know, we would be preparing to go to practice, and they'd say, no, there's no practice today. We'd find out the next day that they played a game for the day instead of practicing. And, you know, I think that that's a big part of it. Wasn't just getting Bud and him saying, okay, this is what we're going to do. It was him being the player's coach that he's well known to be, and bringing these personalities together and making sure that, yes, they were winning games and winning is fun, but it wasn't all about basketball for this team. They did things off the court and bonded that way. And that was really what built the nucleus for this team to be so successful together.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much more insight to add except to just sort of point out that it's easy to roll your eyes and sort of shrug at the idea of how important that cohesiveness is. But, you know, you mentioned the Boston Celtics. I think that's a great example of how badly things can go without that sort of, you know, all for one, one for all kind of mentality. You know, when players start to want more for themselves and less for the team. And I mean, Danny Ainge came out and said similar things, even bolder, I thought. Obviously, not so subtle shot at Kyrie Irving, but just it's important and it matters. And, you know, great teams need that bond, that cohesiveness. And I couldn't agree more that, you know, especially in this case, Milwaukee's coach, Mike Budenholzer, has a whole lot to do with that, and thus a whole lot to do with all the success the Bucks enjoyed in this regular season and most of the playoffs.
Yeah, no question. And Bud now becomes, as I said earlier, a two-time NBA Coach of the Year, but he is also just the second Milwaukee Bucks coach to win Coach of the Year. Don Nelson won the award back in 1984-85. So just like Giannis being the second MVP, Bud becomes the second Coach of the Year, and John Horst also became the second Executive of the Year in franchise history. You might be a little bit surprised if you don't keep too close of an eye on this type of thing, that John Hammond won Executive of the Year in 2009-2010. The Bucks were thought to be an up-and-coming team at that point. Obviously had some things go against them towards the end of the year with injuries and the like, and never really got back to that level they were through the All-Star break late in the season there, that season in 2010. But John Hammond won the award in 2009-10. John Horst wins the award tonight in what was a really close run thing.
Yeah, this feels, I think, a lot better than the last Bucks Executive of the Year winner for a lot of reasons. But John Horst, you know, he kind of caught the other end of the spectrum of what I'm talking about. What I referenced earlier with Bud, you know, they kind of work against each other. Oh, did Horst really make all these moves? Was it Bud? Well, Horst made the Bud move. So that's a pretty big one to start. I mean, all the things we just talked about, all the great things that Mike Budenholzer brought, John Horst brought that. So that's a pretty good first step. And then talk about letting Jabari Parker go, keeping around DJ Wilson, The move for Nico Mirotic, which doesn't work out, but it sure looked like a great move at the time, and it's a gamble you're going to take every single time. And then obviously, you know, we talked about Brook Lopez a lot. Brook Lopez continually just coming up in all sorts of Bucks discourse and here again. So a whole lot of things that John Horst did. And it can, I could see, you know, especially from Masai Ujiri, the case where, you know, Horst, all the great things he did, he didn't bring in the franchise player this year, and Masai did. And went, really, I think off the top of my head, probably the only exec you can make that case for, I guess, unless you want to pick, I guess, Rob Pelinka for the Lakers. I sort of did that as well, but I don't think Rob was making many ballots, if any. So I think Masai made sense to me. He didn't really do that well in the voting because the Raptors didn't seem like they were going to win the title at the end of the year. I guess they had a chance, but it was – everything looks so differently, you know, coming off of the entire postseason. But I think Tim Connelly was high up there. I can't remember. There's one more I can't remember right now who's pretty – maybe Lawrence Frank was decently high up there. But I thought Horst had the best case. Just, again, it's all one cohesive thing. And I think that's kind of fitting for the Bucks awards for this season because it was all, you know, no selfishness, just everyone together for the good of the entire team. I think it's fitting that – that resulted in so many people, three, but that's a pretty significant amount of awards, you know, it being spread out like this, because it was so hard for the voters to identify who was solely responsible because nobody was.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, for when you're looking at this anyway, the GM is the one that's going to get the majority of the credit. But as I said, it was a really close run thing. John Horst just beats out Tim Connelly from Denver, 72 points to 69. So he only beats Connelly out there by 3 points, only one extra first place vote. So Horst had 10 first place votes. Tim Connelly had 9. So, you know, really just one vote could have swung this the opposite way. But Horst finishes with 72 points, as I said. Connelly, 69. Lawrence Frank comes in third with the Clippers, 26. And then Masai Ujiri comes in fourth with 21. And the interesting thing is I've seen a lot of Toronto fans you know, up in arms about this, but there's a couple of things that need to, you know, really be made clear about this. Okay, so first of all, the votes came in at the end of the regular season, so you know, at that point, the Raptors are second in the East. I don't think anyone is expecting them to go on this run. Kawhi Leonard wasn't even in the top five in MVP voting because he barely played during. I mean, not barely played, but he was obviously rested through the regular season. So, you know, sure, that was it proved to be a masterstroke for Nick Nurse in the playoffs. But I think when you're looking at this voting, you know, I don't think that it was an outrage that Ujiri didn't get it, because the other thing that I'm seeing a lot of Raptors fans pointing out is that Pascal Siakam was a late draft pick, Fred VanVleet was undrafted. Okay, well, that wasn't this year. So you don't get credit for things that you've done, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. So I think in the end, for when this voting was done, I think it made sense that you had the Milwaukee executive and the Denver executive at the top, just to run through some of the things that John Horst has done in this past year. Obviously, the big one is hiring Bud. You think back to last offseason and you think about getting Brook Lopez for $3 million. Obviously, that was a masterstroke. You think about not paying Jabari Parker and letting him go. This is a guy that's, you know, a top three draft pick just a couple of years earlier, and you let him go for nothing. That's not something that a lot of executives, and I think a lot of young executives, wouldn't be bold enough to do that and just say, hey, this isn't working out. We don't want to pay this guy. We can do something better, because that's obviously a really high draft pick. Through the season, some of the other things that he was able to do, obviously the big trade, Henson and Dellavedova, you bring back George Hill. Obviously, that one proved to be a masterstroke when you see how George Hill played through the playoffs. And now you believe that George Hill's probably going to come back. Picking up the third-year option for DJ Wilson, I think at the time a lot of people thought that was a ridiculous move. He ends up looking like a real rotation player through the end of the season. Looks like he's going to be a really important part of this team moving forward. I mean, there was just endless moves. As you already pointed, the Mirotić trade, I think at the time, again, Would that have happened if Thon Maker didn't request a move from Milwaukee? I would probably think not. But again, you got a guy, for a championship run, who last year in the playoffs was just enormous for the New Orleans Pelicans, and it didn't work out. Certainly in the playoffs this year with Mirotić not shooting the ball well, but still for mine a hell of a trade and one that could have provided the X factor for you winning a title. And really at that point, with what you were going to try and get with the Thon Maker, who wasn't playing a lot, I mean, he couldn't have done much more there. So really, if you keep going through and there's more and more moves, the Bledsoe contract, I think, we'll see how that pans out. Obviously, the playoffs skews that a little bit. Before the playoffs, you think that's a masterstroke as well. You get a first-team all-defense player for, roughly $16, $17 million a year for 3 years. It's a great deal. So, I think that he did more than enough this year to warrant winning this award.
Yeah, I can't really argue. I mean, again, right now, sure, it seems like Masai should have won for the Kawhi trade, but you're absolutely right. I mean, at the time, Kawhi, good, very good in the regular season. He wasn't a top five MVP finisher for a reason. I mean, he took a lot of games off, clearly was saving a whole lot in the tank. And I think at the time, it was still kind of fair to think, oh, well, they got Kawhi, but is it that Kawhi that we've seen before? Right. Will he get back to that level in time, especially before, he could leave for the Clippers, who, I mean, that was in the news all the time in the regular season, how, Steve Ballmer is at all these games and everything else. So you think, oh, well, they made this trade for this guy who might not get all the way right, and he might just bolt, and everything changed since then. That's fine. And I just think Raptors people who want to be upset about this, your team won the freaking championship. Go enjoy that. Who cares about executive of the year? Trust me, I think this is cool. I think good for John Horst for sure. But if you offered me, and I'm sure if you offered John Horst the chance to trade this for the 2019 championship in Milwaukee, I think everybody affiliated with the Bucks and John Horst family, maybe not his family, but probably his family, is going to say, give us the title. And I think, go enjoy that, Raptors fans. Don't worry about Masai being disrespected by voters who had no idea what was going to happen in June.
Yeah, that's it. And if anything, I mean, this is just another reason why these awards should not happen at the end of June. I mean, it's just ridiculous. This is something that should happen during the playoffs. I don't think anything happened on this award night tonight that made me think, gee, I'm glad they made it a real show tonight. Like, I think that it went too long. I don't think that there was any real great entertainment that made me think that this was worthwhile. The speeches obviously were very, very memorable, but, I got no question. If you had Giannis accept that MVP trophy, before – whatever it would have been, game one or game two of the Eastern Conference Finals, and then get him up in the podium, speaking about it, it would have been the exact same thing. I don't think he needed to be in a room, in front of a room full of people. It would have meant the same to him to win the award. It would have meant a lot to Bucks fans to be able to celebrate that with Giannis. And I just think that, being a regular season award and being able to give this trophy to the player while he's still actually playing just means a little bit more. And then, you don't have these, I guess, skewed opinions of, well, I mean, Kawhi was great in the playoffs, or the Raptors won this, because it doesn't matter. The votes have already done well and truly before that. So, I would hope that this was the last awards night we have and they just go back to the old way, but I'm not really holding my breath on that one. I guess we'll see what happens there. The feel that I got from Twitter is that it wasn't exactly a really popular night. Is that a fair assessment of what you were reading from this?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen anyone say that they really like it. So that's kind of indicative. A lot of people complaining. Full disclosure, I didn't watch it, and not just because I'm in lazy checked out off season mode. Honestly, with free agent approaching, that's not even really an option. But more so that you know, in some small way, part of me was like, well, maybe I don't want to give my view to this stupid show I wish didn't exist. I know I can just follow along everything on Twitter and ESPN and everything's reported and you're tweeting stuff out really helpfully. And everyone on the Bucks beat was good with getting quotes and who won. I was like, well, do I really need to see all of it live when I can just watch the best clips of the speeches? And I know most of the speeches in their entirety and see all the quotes and see all the winners. No, I really don't. So yeah, I would certainly agree in saying it'd be great if they could do this, you know, in front with fans of the team and with the team themselves. I mean, have the whole team there, the whole roster. So instead of doing, you know, just Instagram posts, all the guys that fought with Giannis all year can literally be there with him when he gets the award. I mean, I would prefer that to this weird sort of forced red carpet event that is great for all the guys in the league who love fashion and not so great for the actual idea of the thing.
Well, it was interesting because I don't know. I didn't see them on TV, but the interesting thing for mine was that I didn't even think James Harden or Paul George were there tonight. They certainly were not shown on camera at all, which makes perfect sense because if you know you're not winning an award, why do you want to go to LA? You're probably going to be in the Bahamas or I don't know what you're doing. You're probably somewhere else, you know, enjoying some time off rather than coming to this awards night. So I didn't see them at all. Maybe they were there. I certainly didn't see them shown on camera. But, I mean, at that point, if you want to, like, have this suspenseful thing and then everyone watching on TV doesn't even see the other two candidates there, I mean, you're sort of really defeating the purpose of the whole award night. But
yeah, I know, just to cut in quickly, I know for sure Harden was not there. Not sure about PG. I would guess not. I mean, I think if those guys are there, you're probably going to see them.
Right. That's what I kind of assumed. And at that point, I mean, there was no suspense. I mean, Giannis was always going to win this thing. But the one thing he didn't win, and we'll quickly touch on this, was the Defensive Player of the Year, Rudy Gobert. Wins back-to-back awards. He got 65 first-place votes out of 100. Giannis had 26. So pretty comprehensive win for Gobert, which was maybe a little bit surprising. I mean, I did think that Gobert would win it. I did think it would be a little bit closer. I thought Giannis would get a lot more first-place votes in this one than he did. You know, obviously we know what Giannis was able to do on both ends of the floor, first team all defense player again, playing for the number one defense in the NBA. And sure, he had a lot of help, but with the 1.5 blocks per game, 1.3 steals per game, we know, you know, what he can do on that end. I thought, you know, at some point, I mean, I think at some point he's definitely going to get one of these. Certainly to win MVP and defensive player in the year, in the same year, is something very rare. It's only been done a couple of times in the history of the game. But do you have any real issue with this win for Gobert?
Do I want to go there or do I not, Kane? That's really the question. This is.
You want to go bear? Is that what you said?
I don't want to go bear. I like advancing past the second round. It's just tough, man. I mean, we do this. We've done this now 2 years in a row. This whole facade where everyone acts like Rudy Gobert is the best defensive player in the league and he's not going to get schemed off of the court when you can get a team with four or five good shooters and he can't survive covering them. And even really, I mean, that's – I think people sort of – I'll say something like that and someone will reply, oh, well, you know, no one can keep up with the Warriors, teams with five shooters, blah, blah, blah. I mean – Gobert gets schemed off of the court by the Rockets playing Clint Capella at center. He's not even a stretch five. It's just he just does when there's enough space. He's just not as useful, and he's a really good defender. I'm not going to take that away from Rudy Gobert. I don't think he's a bad player. I just think we know what's going to happen every single year. Every single year there's going to be a team with good enough shooting that can pretty much neutralize him through pick and roll or whatever else. And it's going to happen. He's been a net negative, I think, in 4 of 6 playoff series since he's become a starter, at least like a rotation or more player with the Jazz. You know, they've won, I think, three series. He's only been a net positive in 2 series. It's just off the top of my head. Maybe those numbers are a little outdated now. I doubt it. It's just, you know, and I'm not even necessarily, and I get a lot of, oh, you just want Giannis to win when I share these views, mostly from Jazz people. And it's like, Yeah, I think it'd be cool if Giannis won. I think he's one of the best defenders in the league, if not the defender. But I'm still like, why was Draymond not even top three? I guess people are sick of the Warriors. People are sick of Draymond. I thought he played pretty damn well this year on defense. I know it wasn't up to his old standard for all of the year, but I would rather see a guy like that or like Giannis where, you know, they can get blocks and steals and impact the game directly. They can defend one-on-one. They can play help defense. In my opinion, those are the most useful defenders, the best defenders in the league, guys who can be effective on and off ball. Your Kawhi Leonards are great, not as substantial of a contributor off the ball, still a terrific defender. Obviously, you know, wasn't going to win this year, but just that idea of a player. The low post centers like Gobert, who are only really very effective within 6 feet of the rim or so, I just don't know if those guys are really deserving of the nod at this point. But hey, good for Rudy Gobert stacking up some hardware and qualifying for a Supermax, which he already actually had. But still, good for him.
Yeah, it's some good points you make. Again, it's interesting, the playoff thing. That definitely skews things, I think, because if you watched Utah in the playoffs, you obviously saw that Gobert was really unplayable in a lot of circumstances, and then you remember that and you say, if he's such a big defensive influence, why can't he play in the playoffs? Again, obviously the award wasn't based on what happened in the playoffs, but to your point, obviously, as I said, Giannis comes in second, but then you have Paul George third, Joel Embiid, Miles Turner, then you get to Draymond, who only got 6 votes altogether. He did get 1 first place vote and then 1 third place vote to pick up those 6 points. Exact same thing for Kawhi Leonard, actually, the 1 first place vote for him. So really, in this one, it was Gobert and Giannis, and that was really about it as far as the voting went for this one. It's interesting. I mean, when you talk about Gobert, and obviously he's an intimidating rim protector. There's no question about that. I do remember from the game when we were in Salt Lake City watching the Bucks and the Jazz game, and Gobert, this happened twice. I mean, they tried Gobert on Giannis as the primary defender twice. This game in Utah really stands out. Remember, this was the game that the Bucks went ginormous in the starting lineup because they had no guards left to play. Giannis ends up playing Gobert completely off the floor. This is a game that Utah end up winning, and Donovan Mitchell goes crazy in the fourth quarter. But despite the Jazz winning the game, Rudy Gobert finished with one of the more ridiculous lines I've seen. He played just 19 minutes and finished a minus 36 in a game that the Jazz won when he was trying to defend Giannis. So, look, it was interesting when you think about those two. And obviously it's a defensive award, but I will say that Gobert had zero success, less than zero success trying to guard Giannis this season.
Yeah, and that's there's a versatility aspect that I think really needs to be considered for the award. And I'm glad you pointed out a regular season example. I realize it can seem, idiotic to use a playoffs thing against Gobert. This is a regular season award, even though it seems weird if we just ignore the difference. Whatever, doesn't matter. But like, there are ways teams can scheme Rudy Gobert off the floor in the regular season and in the playoffs. On defense, there's no way you can do that to Giannis defensively. I mean, he's going to be effective on defense, really, no matter what lineup you trot out, no matter what you try to do to him. If you want him involved in more or less actions, you get Giannis by the ball, good luck passing around him, unless one of the better roving help defenders in the league. There's no way around him on that end. He's undeniable there. Just don't think the same is true about Gobert, but oh well.
He'll get one. No, I got no doubt that Giannis is going to get 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 of these by the time his career is done. But that was really the only thing the Bucks didn't win tonight. Chris Middleton was nominated for a few different awards, Community Award, Teammate of the Year, I believe, was another one, or Sportsman of the Year or something like that. But he missed out on those awards, but still, it was nice to see him nominated in some of those off the court awards that obviously mean a lot as well. But again, the NBA awards are done, and I feel like finally now, even though we've said this a lot, I feel like the book is closed on the 2018-19 season. Giannis is the MVP. Bud is the coach of the year. And John Horst is the executive of the year, capping off a ridiculous year for the Bucks, where they win 60 games in the regular season, their best regular season in over 30 years. The first time they win 60 games since 1981. And obviously they made it to the conference finals, but it feels like it has been a long, long season that has finally ended. But the good news is we get free agency in about 5 days' time.
Yeah, good news for sure. No break right now in the NBA world, but I guess there will be pretty much one. I mean, summer league and stuff, but this is the intensity right now ramping up towards free agency, which I think for a lot of people has become the main event, which I think is kind of sad, but it will be a fun, hopefully fun, certainly interesting, certainly insightful time for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, I am certainly predicting, and again, that's 6 o'clock Sunday, everything is going to kick off, and I am predicting that the Bucks are going to have some early action on free agency. That is what I am expecting. So we will definitely talk about that one last time, get everyone ready for what is sure to be a very busy few days for the coach of the year and the executive of the year as they try and navigate their way to bring in most of these guys back to have the same success next season. But that will most likely be for us on Thursday. I think we're going to get together Thursday night and discuss that and give our last thoughts, our last predictions. Any wild takes from you will be well and truly welcome. But we will just, you know, we're going to try and, as I said, get everyone ready for what is sure to be an extremely busy and potentially anxious couple of days for Bucks fans.
Bucks fans, I think, will always find a way to be anxious. But still, anxious Bucks fans, we thank you for listening. As always, you know, please continue to do so. As Kane just said, you know, the season's over, the awards are done, everything else, but we've still got plenty of content left to produce, plenty of things left to talk about. So continue to listen, download, subscribe, tell your friends, everything else that you great people have been doing. And thank you, Kane. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.